and track 12, our feature article. And here is Brian with this week's feature article.
Earlier this year, Alice Henderson wrote in the advertiser's Nature Diary that she was setting out on a quest to visit every beach in the South Hams. During June, she wrote a couple of articles updating us on how this was going. She wrote, "As of the beginning of June, I've stepped foot on 24 beaches out of 60, so I have a little way to go. Whilst some visits were just for a quick dip in the sea, others I set about exploring, and I thought I would share my experiences of Bigbury Beach. Bigbury Beach is home to the only tombolo in the South Hams, and no, I'm not referring to the fun raffle game where picking tickets out of a bucket might win you a prize. That's a tombola. A tombolo is a unique geographical feature where, thanks to the movement of sediment, a beach turns into a spit which joins up to an island. In this case, the tidal sandy causeway stretches out to Burr Island, a small picturesque isle home to wildflowers, bird life, the Pilchard Inn and the Burr Island Hotel. Exploring this beach came as part of my first overnight outing in my new van, staying at a campsite at Mount Folly Farm, a site with spectacular views across the sea and surrounding coastline. I've been to Bigbury Beach on numerous occasions before, but my favourite time of year is May, thanks to the multitude of wildflowers and nesting seabirds. With the tide mid-flow and going out, it was a perfect time to set out. Walking from the free parking area down the short track, I arrived at the south of the beach at 7 a.m. and had it all to myself. The sun was shining, and while some of the beach was in shadow, the freshly uncovered sandbanks and shoreline were shimmering in the fresh sunlight. I stood for a little while taking in the scenery and watched a number of seagulls going about their business. I noticed one greater black-backed gull was in transition plumage, half juvenile, mottled browns and beige, and half adult, bright white and deep dark grey. I'm used to seeing an array of seagulls, but had never seen one half and half like this before. Nearby, a herring gull had found a spider crab for breakfast and seemed unwilling to share it with its friends. It flew away from the other gulls with its catch, but every time it landed and started to tuck in, it was bombarded by them all, trying to help themselves. Further away, in the shallow water, another great black-backed gull was using its foot scuffle technique to rustle up some grub from the silty sand. Overhead, with its beak full of dry vegetation, a herring gull flew off, no doubt in the direction of a good nesting spot. Gazing out to sea, there appeared to be hundreds of seabirds near the horizon, tiny white specks, diving where I presumed an abundance of fish was present. I made my way round towards the mouth of the River Avon that runs into the sea between Bigbury and Bantham beaches. Heading towards the river bank, the golden sunlight glanced off the cliff edge, creating a crisp line between shadow and light across the sand in front of me, with the golden light also highlighting every ripple in the sand left by the receding water. Turning towards the back of the beach, where the cliffs vary from red sandstone to flaky earth, I spotted a stonechat clinging to a twig on the cliffside, singing away with the call sounding like stones chinking together. Whilst investigating the rocks more closely, I noticed that some of the red sandstone was particularly full of holes, and I wondered what was weathering that particular stone. Usually rocks and stones are weathered through either physical processes, such as being bashed by the sea, or affected by varying temperatures or chemical processes, such as being dissolved by acid rain. But these rocks were riddled with holes that looked more like animal burrows, and I was unsure what had made them. The flaky, earthy cliffs above were home to pockets of plants and flowers. The little bobbles of thrift were just starting to come to their peak. Valerian, with its multiple different colours, brightened up the cliffs, and ox-eye daisies were scattered in between. Further on, rock samphire grew, with its succulent and edible leaves filling every crack and crevice in the rocks. Wandering along the bottom of the cliffs, I found a decent Sainsbury's shopping bag lying in the sand and decided to adopt it. I proceeded to pick up litter as I walked back around the top of the beach. In amongst the fairly scarce litter, I found a beach toy, but instead of placing it in my rubbish bag, I went over to put it in the beach toy library I had spotted on my way down to the beach. Returning to the northern end of this part of the beach, with the tide still preventing passage on the sand around the causeway, I meandered my way through the slick, green, weed-coated rocks to a set of steps that take you up and over the little headland, past the Venus Cafe and main car park, and then down to the rest of the beach. Descending onto the causeway, I sat myself down on the small triangle of dry sand, untouched by the latest high tide, and proceeded to dig into my breakfast. A herring gull landed nearby, hoping to share my snacks. Every time I looked up, it seemed to be standing just a little closer, reminding me of a game of grandmother's footsteps. I watched as oyster catchers flitted along the northern shoreline and observed a couple making their way across the beach to join them for their daily swim. I made my way across fresh, untouched sand of the tidal causeway to Burr Island. As I approached the island, I was greeted by a playful gang of starlings, swooping, twisting and chattering around the old Pilchard's Inn. Bluebells cover the island at this time of year, despite the lack of trees. Thanks to the bracken cover providing them tree-like shelter, there's a beautiful display to admire. A family of stonechats flitted in and out of the flowers, with two adults feeding a baby. Nearby, a pair of pigeons fluffed and preened their feathers, seemingly unperturbed by my presence. I started to climb the island, stepping over lots of little rabbit diggings. Reaching the top, I turned and watched a pair of house martins land on the path behind me. Scooping up the muddy dirt, they flew off in the direction of the hotel to make their nests. At the back of the island on the western side, steep cliffs drop down to the rocky shore and sea stacks rise up, providing the perfect perch for gulls to survey their domain. I settled on the clifftop amongst the drifts of sea pinks and sea campion and peered down at the rocky cliffs and shore below. A bit of movement caught my eye, and I spotted a number of shags nesting on the smallest of nooks in the cliff. As one of them shuffled, I spied a pair of bright white eggs. After careful spotting, I counted a total of 8 shag and 2 herring gull nests from my viewpoint, all with birds sitting keeping their eggs warm. A pair of kestrels drifted into view, seemingly floating in mid-air. They rose high in a thermal, and I watched them until they were so high I lost sight of them. Looking out to sea, a long line of seagulls was travelling low to the water. Maybe they'd had their fill of fish and were on their way to rest and digest their breakfasts. Flying in the opposite direction was a pair of juvenile gannets, not yet in their full, striking white colour, but mottled with greys and browns. They flew with purpose in the direction from which the gulls were leaving, possibly in the hope of catching some of the remaining fish. One bird I came to Burr Island hoping to see was the fulmar, a small, stocky bird, distantly related to the albatross, and after some patience I noticed the familiar wingbeat of the species. Fulmars are more commonly found further north in places like Scotland, but a few venture to South Devon's cliffs to nest. Being one of the family of tube noses, they're renowned for squirting potential threats with a stinky, oily substance, so it's best not to get too close. I watched as one drifted past on the breeze, flapping its wings every now and then to stay airborne. On the northwestern corner of the island, there's the most amazing display of Armeria, otherwise known as thrift, sea pinks, or ladies' cushions. The latter name may be inspired by the soft mounds created by the plant, out of which their pink, bobble-like flowers grow. Also enjoying these pillows of pink were a pair of skylarks, whose noisy song erupted as they emerged from the flowers. Back on the beach, I skirted the north shore of the causeway, making my way to the rocks to deposit my bag to go for a swim. The spot I chose was home to an amazing fishbowl-shaped rock pool, home to a number of blennies. A dark-coloured fish scooted across the pool to join the others on a patch of sand, and I watched as it gradually changed colour to match its friends and the colour of its surroundings. I nearly didn't see the other blenny, which in comparison to the others was huge, actually about 15 centimetres. It was trying to hide behind a flimsy piece of seaweed. I waded my way into the shallow sea for a swim. When I eventually had enough depth of water to wave my arms and legs around in some kind of fashion to propel myself forward, I submerged. After swimming a little way alongside the rocky shore, I noticed an oyster catcher hopping around. I stopped and watched as it prized crustaceans off the rocks with its long orange beak. Not wanting to disturb it, I turned round and swam back to the beach. As I was getting changed into dry clothes, I heard a sizzling sound coming from the rocks. After some investigation, I discovered areas of water draining from the rock pools over barnacles. The heat from the sunshine was making them hiss as the water evaporated. For a moment, I stood with my eyes closed, listening to the sounds of the seaside and smelling the salty air. I made a mental note to be grateful for such a lovely day.